I'm Jared Dillian. Welcome to Be Smart, the podcast about money, the podcast about highbrow money, lowbrow money, and everything in between, and how not to be an idiot with your money, because there was a lot of that going around. The United States collects a lot of economic data. We have hundreds of economic indicators, and the one you're probably most familiar with is unemployment. That comes out the first Friday of every month. So everybody knows about unemployment. Right now, the unemployment rate is 5.8%. Okay. You might know about retail sales. You might know about GDP, but that's probably about it. So what I'm here to do today is to explain these economic indicators in some detail. So let's start with GDP. And when I talk about GDP, I mean real GDP. The real GDP is the market value of all goods and services produced in a nation during a specific time period. Real GDP measures a society's wealth by indicating how fast profits may grow and the expected return on capital. It is named real because each year's data is adjusted to account for changes in year-on-year prices, which means inflation. The real GDP is a comprehensive way to gauge the health and well-being of an economy. The Federal Reserve uses data such as the real GDP and other related economic indicators to adjust its monetary policy. Now, where does the data come from? The Department of Commerce. The Department of Commerce's Bureau of Economic Analysis releases the data quarterly, including any revisions, within the last week to 10 days of each month following the end of the quarter. Data are spelled out as being advanced estimates, preliminary estimates, and final numbers. Each data release includes an explanation of why the GDP increased or decreased from the previous quarter. So GDP growth has averaged about 3% in the last 10 years and about 4% before that. There have been some discussions as to why growth is slowing. M2. What is M2? M2 is the money supply. M2 money supply represents the aggregate total of all money a country has in circulation. It takes into account all physical currency, such as bills and coins, which really isn't that much. Demand deposits, savings and checking accounts, traveler's checks, assets and retail money market accounts, and small money market mutual funds, individual time deposits, and savings deposits such as CDs, in addition to some repurchase agreements and Eurodollar holdings. That probably sounded like a bunch of nonsense. Why is it important? The Federal Reserve uses this data to assess current economic and financial conditions and to help alter its monetary policy, which includes raising and lowering interest rates. The Fed's actions are aimed at bolstering or reducing the money supply. Economists and others also use M2 data to predict cyclical economic recessions, good luck with that, and recoveries and expected changes in stock prices, not to mention expected changes in the Fed's monetary policy. Some economists believe that M2's relevancy has waned over the past 20 years. For many years, this monetary measurement had closely paralleled the growth or contraction of the U.S. economy and overall changes in prices. But over the last two decades, a bevy of changes, such as the introduction of new depository products, the movement of consumer funds from bank deposits to investment accounts, and the internationalization of the economy, has caused the money supply data to fall out of sync with other economic indicators. Well, maybe. But let's just say that the M2, the money supply, has been increasing very rapidly. And there was an economist named Milton Friedman. His whole economic theory was something called monetarism. And he basically said that it was the amount of money in the economy that determined inflation. Because you had more money chasing the same amount of goods, that's actually what's happening. We have more money in the economy chasing the same amount of goods. Nevertheless, the Fed and some economists and analysts pay attention to the longer-term trends in growth or reduction in the money supply, particularly the six-month figures. And the Fed retains its power to increase the money supply by lowering interest rates as a way to counter a sluggish economy and to reduce the money supply by raising interest rates if the economy gets overheated. Where does the data come from? The Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System releases the data both weekly and monthly during either the second or third week of the month. Monthly data goes back to January 1959. Weekly information has been available since January 1975. Now, this is the one that everybody cares about. This is the one that people are focusing on these days. Inflation, CPI, the Consumer Price Index. The CPI measures changes in the prices paid for goods and services by urban consumers for the specified month. The CPI is essentially a measure of individuals' cost of living changes and provides a gauge of the inflation rate related to purchasing those goods and services. The CPI does not include every item an individual may buy, but instead takes a sampling of several hundred goods and services across 200 item categories. Data is collected through phone calls and personal visits in 87 urban areas across the country. The CPI does not include income, Social Security taxes, or investments in stocks, bonds, or life insurance. But it does include all sales taxes associated with the purchase of those goods and services. This statistic is the best indicator of inflation that we have to rely on. It is particularly closely scrutinized by financial economists now, since it shows inflation to be at a 16-year low. Not at a 16-year low anymore. Changes in inflation can spur the Fed to take action to change its monetary policy. Where does the data come from? The U.S. Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics releases the national CPI, an average of all areas sampled monthly during the second or third week after the end of the measured month. CPIs for three specific metropolitan areas are also published monthly, while CPIs for every other metropolitan regions are published every other month. Data includes details about very specific products. Now, there is something called the PPI, which is the Producer Price Index, which is basically the same as a CPI, except it's done at the wholesale level. It measures the changes in the selling prices of goods and services received by U.S. producers over a period of time. Think of it as the business side equivalent to the CPI that measures changes in prices paid by consumers. The PPI captures price movements at the wholesale level. The CPI captures price movements at the retail level. Consumer confidence, a gauge of the public's confidence about the health of the U.S. economy that reflects the public's optimism or pessimism and the nation's mood. This is a very useful statistic. Five questions are asked of a random sampling of 5,000 individuals, of whom about 3,500 respond. The survey asks their thoughts and feelings about business conditions, the labor market, consumer spending, and economic growth, and their financial and employment expectations 6 months into the future. Each question can be assigned three opinions: positive, negative, and neutral. Why is it important? This statistic is a leading indicator of consumer spending. Consumers are more inclined to spend money when they are feeling confident about their financial and employment prospects. By the way, you should have seen the Consumer Confidence Index during the middle of the financial crisis. Where does the data come from? The Conference Board's Consumer Research Center releases the data monthly on the last Tuesday of each month. And finally, retail sales. This data tracks monthly U.S. retail sales, details changes from previous periods, and identifies in which sectors sales increased and or decreased. The data is based on a random sampling of 5,000 retail and food service firms. Figures are broken out to include and exclude sales of automobiles, ex-autos. Sales are weighted and benchmarked to represent the nation's 3 million retail and food services firms. So that's just an intro to some of the economic data that I look at on a daily basis. And now you'll be more informed when you see this stuff on CNBC.